I'm gonna have trouble taping the intro. We should just make this the intro. Just laughing all the way to. Welcome to an episode of Gaming in the Six. Welcome back. It's our first episode in 2 weeks, but that's how we're doing it this time around. Episodes every 2 weeks. I hope you enjoyed last week with myself, Momin Qureshi, and Steve Leung. And guess who's back in studio for the first time in a little while?
Guess who's back?
Back again. Christine's back.
Tell the listeners.
Tell several of them, please. Retweet it, Instagram it, do whatever. Interestingly enough, you can find us in several platforms, Gaming in the Six, gamingin6.com, Gaming in the Six on Twitter, on Instagram, on the Facebook. I think that's it.
On our podcast on SoundCloud, iTunes.
Google Play.
Yep. All of those fun.
All those things. You know, how come they don't call it the Facebook anymore?
I call it the Facebook.
Yeah, I do too.
I call it the internet as well.
Internets.
The internets. I call it internets. The Twitter.
Internets, plural.
I'm on the Twitter.
Internet, eh?
Yes.
Okay, so we're back to do another show of Gaming in the Six, and we have a lot on tap for you. First of all, Christine, you went to see a preview of Assassin's Creed Odyssey last night.
We were taping
the show on a Wednesday. You were there on a... No, we're taping the show on a Thursday. You were there on a Wednesday. I've got to get my day straight. You saw a preview of it, so we're going to talk about that momentarily. We also have an interview from the senior producer of Assassin's Creed, so if you're not going to get enough from Christine, you're going to hear from the producer's mouth as well. On top of that, about a week or maybe a week and a half ago, Colin Robertson, who is also part of this show, went to check out Starlink, which is coming out on October 16th. So he's going to share his thoughts, and Christine has been going vroom, 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 zoom, zoom, zoom around the track playing some Forza. So she's going to have a review of the latest Forza game, which is called Forza Horizon 4.
Yeah.
Pulled that out of the top of my head.
It's very impressive.
Christine didn't flash a 4 to me, what you guys couldn't see.
It's fine. Nobody needs to know. Secrets of radio.
Nobody needs to know anything. So there's a lot going on. But first of all, Christine, it's good to have you back in studio doing this face-to-face.
Thank you.
Yeah, I like it. It's kind of like old times. So you went to see the unveiling or the media preview of Assassin's Creed Odyssey at Ubisoft Toronto Studios.
I did.
Now, for people who may be new to the show and didn't listen to the old iteration of our show, they might not be aware as to what degree of Assassin's Creed fan you indeed are. So before we talk about this new Assassin's, why don't you give a little history as to how little or how much you love this franchise?
It's one of my favorite franchises, hands down. Assassin's Creed.
I prefer hands up.
Hands up, baby, hands up.
Give me your hug. I haven't heard that song in forever.
There you go. It's musical today.
Yeah.
Assassins and I have a very long history. When I first, about a bajillion years ago, I was living with a gentleman, and he brought gaming back into my life after a hiatus. And one of the games that he said, I think you'll like this, was Assassin's Creed.
Number one?
The very first one with our man Altair. And he was correct. I loved it. And right away it had me hooked. I loved the whole history angle of it. I loved the sneakiness of it. I loved the assassination bits of it. And I have played every Assassin's game since then. The small games, the... I don't even have a PlayStation Portable, and I even played that one when it was ported to the Xbox. So I played all of them. Most of them good, some of them not great.
Yeah.
I infamously gave the Origin game, which came out last year?
Yeah, that's the Egypt one.
Yeah. Not a good score. I was one of the only people who did not like it. And so but I'm still optimistic despite that this new one coming out, which comes out tomorrow, will be good. I'm already hearing some good things, but I am also hearing, if you liked Origins, you're going to like this. Oh, and I'm like, hey.
Okay, so first of all, before we get, which one is your favorite one? Is it the brother-sister one? What is it called, Syndicate?
Syndicate? No, my favorite one is, I would say, 2, just because I like most people, have such a fondness for Ezio.
I was going to say, that was Ezio?
And the whole Ezio Chronicles is just fantastic storytelling and gameplay. I really liked tie that one up in a bow and then put Black Flag on top of that. Because Black Flag was a masterpiece in my mind. It was one of the best, if not the best, created and concept Assassin's Creed game that they had done. It worked on every level. They brought in, you know, bringing in the ships was a fantastic idea. Making him be a part of the lore, but also on the outskirts of it was a great way to reinvent what was a pretty stale franchise. It was getting a little iffy, and they had just come off a couple not great Assassin's games. So Black Flag is definitely, and I love Syndicate. I thought it was great. I loved having the brother-sister combo, and I loved running around the streets of London. And
old-timey London.
Yeah, it was great. Mm-hmm. Beating people up and then doing things.
So where are we at with Odyssey then? Because we've been a lot of places. Last time we were in Egypt. Where are we now?
We are in Greece.
Ooh.
Ancient Greece. It's interesting, you know, yesterday, so they had a launch party on Wednesday night at Ubisoft Toronto. The night before, they'd had the really big launch in Montreal, because it's a Montreal-based one. Quebec, Ubisoft Quebec. Ubisoft Quebec or Ubisoft Montreal?
Ubisoft Montreal
is the brains behind this one. So they had the big launch party there. So they had a smaller one yesterday. It had the narrative director, the game director, and the gentleman who plays the main character in the male version. Because this game, you can play as either a woman or a man.
Which is cool.
Which I love.
Mm-hmm.
And so we got to hear a bit about the creation of it. We got to hear about really the evolution of the game into the RPG world. It's so interesting to see how they've taken storytelling, because we know all of these assassins worlds and they keep taking it back in time and back in time and back in time. So how do you keep it with the lore when you go so far back that, I mean, the assassins aren't even a thing in this one. Like, this is before Origins. This is the beginning of the beginning. So how do you do that? How do you keep it fresh? And one of the ways that they're going to do it is through the story of the first Civ, which has always been a constant throughout, in one way or another. It was definitely more in the early games, finding first Civ lore, the orb. Excuse me. It was always a bigger part of it. And then once the Desmond storyline was done, it kind of fizzled out. So I do like that they're bringing it back. It I think, is possibly going to be the only connector between the existing Assassin's Creed games that we know and what we're getting now. I feel that's the only thing. And it's actually optional, apparently. You don't really have to go into future times as much as you need to, or it's not a mandatory thing. It'll be there if you want to play it, do. If you don't, a lot of people I've heard feel that going back and forth between present and the actual game itself is too jarring. You lose interest. I love it, but they've decided to make it optional. So if you want to do that, then do that. I will be doing that.
Now, remember when they announced the one that went to Egypt? What was it called?
Origins.
Origins. People were really pumped because there was obviously a lot of history in Egypt,
mm-hmm.
a lot of cool ideas, running across pyramids, all that kind of stuff. Greece, similar. Lots of history, lots of cool ancient sites, lots of cool, you know, things they can weave in terms of, like, philosophers, all the history that they have, the Olympics, all that kind of stuff. How are you feeling about going to Greece, and what did you think about what you saw last night?
I am a little skeptical about it, just for the fact that it's not a lot of the gameplay that I like, because I like to be an assassin. I like to be never seen. I like to skulk around and you know, assassinate my fellow people. This will be a lot of hand-to-hand stuff, as you can even tell quite openly from the trailer. It's going to be a lot of 300-style assaults and whatnot, which I'm not thrilled about, and I wasn't thrilled about in Origins as well, but that is the direction that the game is going, so that is what it is. If you liked it, good for you. I like the idea of bringing in the concept of a mythology in a game that, for all intents and purposes, is quote unquote, based in reality. Like, you know, it'll be interesting to see where they draw the line. We've seen Medusa, you know, we've seen Cyclops. What do you do with that? How do you interweave it into, other than the mythical stuff, like, how do you weave it into an actual story? You know, is it just, I'm assuming you will eventually battle these creatures. How can you have Medusa in the game and then not battle her? Will it be a drug hallucination? Will it just be like a concept? I don't know. So I'm curious. I mean, Greece is perfect for the kind of storytelling that assassins like to do, just because you're right. It is so steeped in lore. It has guys like Socrates. Socrates is a guy you'll meet in this. And it's also, like other games, good for educational purposes. There will be, much like in Origins, an educational part coming to it later, so you can use the map as a guide, as you could with Origins, and be like, here's the origin of this, here is this, you know, that kind of educational purpose has always been a fascinating thing in the Assassin's games to me, because, you know, they look so much into it, they have historians who work on the game, you know, they put in this much effort, it's almost a shame if you don't get anything out of it. And how many other games did he say that to?
Yeah, I mean, the Ubisoft has always been really great about the places that they go, making them so detailed and accurate and to scale. And I don't remember which one was in France, but I remember that was like one of the first ones where it was like really just very well done. And they had like Notre Dame made to like specifications and everything. And so it's very cool to do that and like go through games and see that stuff. So
was that Unity?
I know, you're asking.
That was the broken one, right?
Yeah, it wasn't a good game, I remember. I remember it looked good. It looked good. It wasn't good itself.
Yeah.
Which is, how they say, unfortunate. But
yeah, so it was cool. I mean, I'm excited to play as a female character. I feel like it'll be
Unity.
Yeah, I feel like it'll be an interesting dynamic. As a woman, I like to play as a female character, and I always think that the female characters are written very strong for, I mean, there are a few exceptions, but when it comes to the Assassin's games, the women have, when they are in the main story, they are usually equals to the men. Like, they're not, even in the harshest of environments, they're never downplayed as a lesser character. In fact, they're usually sometimes smarter.
Sure.
Or they, you know, much like in Syndicate, you know, Evie was, she was all focused on the first Civ. She was very intellectual, whereas Jacob was a brawling guy. He was more about taking the land and doing that. So they always like to counterbalance the male and the female character. And the decision to make an entirely female character, I think, is really interesting. One of the things that you'll hear about in the interview that's coming up, is I asked about that because it's a pretty expensive thing to do, to have somebody come in and do both, like, two actors come in, do the exact same character, and do, like, 500 pages of dialogue. Like, this is a lot because you have to do it for any option, whatever the player picks. So I really liked his answer. It was, you know, even though the actors are saying the same things, they're giving different things to it. Like, you know, and it makes me feel like maybe you'll want to take that story, as if you're playing as her, if you're playing as him, into different directions depending on how just the actor has given across the performance.
Shall we hear from the producers?
Yes, let's do that. Let's go back to E3.
All right, here we go. Mark Alexi Cote, senior producer, talking about Assassin's Creed Odyssey.
I don't even know where to begin with this interview. I have been a huge Assassin's fan from the very beginning. Where is Odyssey in all of this?
So Odyssey is set in 431 BC in ancient Greece, and we're going to give you the chance to live the epic Odyssey of a legendary Greek hero. One of the things that I love about Odyssey is that we're giving you a lot of choice. It starts with the choice of choosing your hero, whether you want to play as Cassandra or Alexios. The choice is going to be yours, as we're transforming the game more into an RPG than ever before.
That was probably one of the most exciting changes for me as a woman. I've always liked to play, and you've had in the last few games female characters and the ability to switch back and forth. Why did you decide to make it single character focus, but you get to make that decision?
So again, we want to make this change so that you can better relate to this experience. So we've made many changes to support that, some of them being the introduction of the dialogue trees, dialogues, so that you can steer the course of the story. But it's all about improving the relationship that people have with the game. So I think character choice is super important for that, but choosing the tone of the game, how you respond to NPCs, situations as well, is very important. So it's our drive towards this improvement to the relationship.
It must have been a very long process, but also kind of an expensive one to have two actors doing the entire thing.
It is. It is a huge investment on our part to be able to support that. But you know what? I feel like I've got two different games in one, in a way, because the actors bring it's the same script for both of them, but they each bring their own interpretation to that script. Sometimes when I play with Alexios and other times when I play with Cassandra, I don't make the same choices because I relate differently to those characters and I want to make them do different things. So I think it's going to be very interesting for our players.
Now let's talk about the fighting mechanics. They were very prominent in the previous game. They're definitely back here. What changes have been made?
So we are continuing in the same steps as Origins with a hitbox-based system. And the reason we're doing that is to give more growth over time to our players and the experience, so because it requires more skills through time. And what we have changed this year is that we've removed the shield, for one, because we want the players to be more on the offensive and not always turtling behind a shield. And we've added special abilities. So those special abilities are great because they make the combat much more dynamic. So if you have an enemy that has a shield in front of you, you can use the ability that we call the shield break. So you rip away the shield, you smash the enemy with the shield, and you throw it up. And it's very good to push enemies back. We've got the Sparta kick as well, which is very good for crowd control, like pushing enemies away. But it's also very good when you board enemies at sea. Enemy ships at sea, because the ancient Greek ships did not have very high railings, and you can Sparta kick people into the sea, and then you get a shark that can come and eat them, and it's just fun. I could do that all day.
That's the craziest thing I've ever heard. Well, let's talk about some of the sailing. It's been in the last few games, and you know, Ubisoft has a whole pirate game now. What part does being on the high seas really play?
Well, it's an important part of the game because since the beginning we wanted to call this game Odyssey. And you cannot have an Odyssey without a ship, I think, and without being at sea. So the sea is the place where you get a chance to explore it. You get the chance to... It's completely seamless as well, so there's no loading. You just hop on your ship, and you can decide to explore the Greek islands. And each one of those islands is these self-contained stories that can just break the pace of the main game, give you something to explore, live the Greek life a little bit, find a bit of romance options in there. So it is an important part of exploring and conquering this experience.
You know, when you talk about the Roman life and the experiences you can have, I feel like it's story-wise so far away from the beginning of the Assassin's world, where it was all about never being seen and never, you know, always hiding in the shadows. How has the storytelling in this game changed?
Well, it has changed because it is much wider and bigger and more expensive than ever before. We've got more than 30 hours of dialogues just in this game, and dialogues with choices, with interaction, and that allow you to steer the course of the story. So we started out many years ago with a very, even though we were an open world game, with a very, very linear story, and now we've got a game with many stories in it, the present day being one of them, all the islands having those self-contained narratives, and you can find many of those on the mainland as well, branching storylines, multiple storylines as well on which to invest on. So the game has grown to be something like this massive offer for players who love single player games and with a lot of storytelling.
You mentioned the present day stuff, so it is in the game.
It is in the game. It is back. It's the continuation of the story of Leila Hassan, which I think people really love that we came back in Origins with a strong protagonist in the present day, a protagonist that you can play. So you'll get more content in the present day as well, so that we can go deeper into the Assassin's Creed lore. One of the things that I like about the game is that we'll be able. Leila is looking for first civ knowledge, first civ artifact. And she's not just going to find one in the past. She's going to find many artifacts, ancient Greece being very, very rich and very tied to first civ lore. This is something that we're going to explore with a lot of depth.
Now, just to keep on the same topic too, it's how do you draw the fine line between the conflict that goes on in ancient Greece in that time, and then the conflict, of course, that exists with the Templars and the Assassins in the future.
So it's always this quest for knowledge that's in the present day, and who's going to control this knowledge? That's what I love about the franchise, because it's always about exploring a pivotal moment in history, and it gives us a lot of freedom as creators, because we've got this continuous thread in the present day, and then we can choose an era in the past that truly fits what we want to accomplish with this entry. In our case, we wanted to revolutionize the way we told stories in AC, that's why one of the reasons why we chose ancient Greece, because the Greeks were master storytellers. They basically invented comedy, tragedy, started structuring books and chapters, all this stuff that we don't necessarily realize comes from them, and it felt like the perfect setting to reinvent the way we tell stories.
Now, how big is this map? Because the map for the previous game was gigantic.
So it's at least twice as big as Origin. It is a huge game. A lot of this will be covered in water. The Aegean Sea is like beautiful place for you to explore your ship, but that's where you'll find adventure as well. So it's a huge map, but it's got very generous amount of content in it for our players as well.
That is Mark Alexi Cote, senior producer on Assassin's Creed Odyssey, out as the time you hear the show. So go get it. Can I tell you too?
When I was at the Assassin's event last night, I drank a lot, but that's neither here nor there. I'm a little bit hungover.
Shocking.
I'm not going to lie. We shut her down pretty hard last night.
Well, people should know you're technically on vacation right now, so it's all good. It's all good.
I am. That's why I'm back on the show this week, because I'm on vacation. They have some fantastic swag for this new game.
Yeah, you were showing some on your Insta story.
Oh, my God. They have really upped their game in the UB Workshop Assassin swag department. Not only do they have interesting, like, the statues of both male and female characters, but they have really fantastic-looking hoodies and jackets, and there's a backpack. And, like, if you're a fan of Assassin's Creed and you like some of that swag, you should definitely check out the UB Workshop just to have a gander and see what some of the new stuff is, because it's pretty sweet.
I agree with you.
The white jacket with the red trim, I was like, I kept looking over and being like, you think they'd notice if I tech that? And it's right above a sign that says, do not touch. So, of course, I touched because I'm an idiot. But I was like, maybe somebody distract people and I will just take this jacket home with me.
I mean, if people are as drunk as you say they were, maybe. But I feel like they weren't all that way.
I should have stayed till the very end, but...
Okay, we do want to remind you that we do have a little talk about Starlink coming up with Colin Robertson, who went to check it out again at Ubisoft Toronto about a week and a half or 2 weeks ago, and he has a special guest with him. And I can tell you who it is, but it's a voice from the past.
Doodaloo, doodaloo, doodaloo.
And you might think you know what it is because I said Ubisoft, but it might not be who you think it is. How about that? A little misdirection. Or maybe I'm just lying to you. Who knows?
You crazy. You straight up crazy.
But before we get to Colin's talk on Starlink with the mystery guest, we also want to talk about Forza Horizon 4.
Forza!
You went to zoom, zoom, zoom around the track.
Yeah,
zoom,
the wonderful people of Xbox Canada sent me a code about a week and a half ago and said, you love Forza. Why don't you play it? Because when I was doing the when I went to Fan Expo and I did that 1 hour stream for Xbox Canada, my requested game was Horizon 4, and she's like, "How about Horizon 3?" I'm like, "Fine, I won't play the new game yet." So Forza Horizon is a fun little franchise that I have truly enjoyed. I think every iteration of that game I've really liked.
Yeah, and it's different than the main Forza series.
Yeah, it's fun. It's kind of silly. Like, it's a little bit kooky. It doesn't take itself as seriously. It's not all about hardcore racing. It's about doing fun little events. It's about music. It's about driving around and exploring. It's about sometimes having the craziest cars. It's about going head-to-head with ridiculous things, like in this game... You race a train, because why not?
I love that idea.
Why would you not race a train?
Sure.
So Forza Horizon, if you've never played it before, it's, if you like racing games, I think it's the Forza franchise is my favorite. Absolutely. Like, both Forza and Forza Horizon, I think, set a ridiculously high level for racing games. They're fun. They're interesting. This year, they did a few changes to the franchise that I wasn't sure how well they were going to work. They brought it to Britain, which I, again, as a Brit, I love it. So, yay! I was trying a few times. I was like, I wonder if I can go find my aunt's house. Like, tooling around and be like, I could go visit the cousins and hang out with them. This year, it's the big change is all four seasons are in it. And the game, each season comes with its own challenges, obviously. Not just racing challenges, physically racing challenges, but like different aspects of the environment like really affect how you play. In the winter, obviously, you've got ice, you've got snow, you've got to deal with that. You've in the fall, you've got mud, so everything's mucky. It'll drag right. the car down. In the spring, it's raining, so you have to deal with wet seasons. And then, of course, summer is just summer. Summer is the time to go and enjoy and have a hootenanny, and everybody races around like crazy.
I do like hootenannies.
Me too. So this iteration, another interesting fact, what they've done is that the seasons will change. It's an open world. In the beginning, you do play, I'm going to call it a campaign. It's not really a campaign, but it's you get to experience all four seasons and see what they're really like, and you get to do a whole bunch of different races, different styles of racing, and then the game unlocks to the entire open world, which is what you will play for the remainder of it. And everybody plays the same season. Everybody, if it is spring, then every person online, every person playing this game is playing it in spring.
Interesting.
Every week, the seasons will change. So this week, right now, it's Thursday. So yesterday or the day before just started fall. Before I left for vacation, it was spring. So that's a good thing, and it's also a bad thing. My worry from the beginning, and I think rightfully so because I'm already starting to experience, is that a week in gaming world is a long time.
It's a very long time.
And there's already, like, there's certain things that come up. Like, so in fall, there'll be, right now, there's a couple of new barn finds. If you don't know what a barn find is, it's where they circle an area in purple on the map, and you have to find a broken down jalopy or whatever in a barn, and they'll restore it, and it's usually a beautiful car. And so there are specific seasonal barn finds. There are specific seasonal racing events. In like fall and winter, or in fall and spring, it's more of like dirt bike type stuff. Like, it's very off-roading. The downside to that is that once your week is up, if you've completed everything, I guess that's fine. But if you haven't, then you have to wait a month until that comes around again. But on the flip side, if you are a big Forza fan and you went through and blasted through all those challenges, well, then you got to wait another week till you got new challenges, till the seasons change. So there's unless you just want to go in and create your own, which you can go in and create your own events. That's fine. They encourage people to do that. I don't really like to do that. It's not really my thing. But I guess that's a way of making it fresh, but I also feel like, as somebody who, especially people who play a lot of games like we do, there's something better next week. Like, there's a different game to play next week, especially in this season. You got Red Dead's right around the corner.
Sure is.
Assassin's is tomorrow. It's, you know, this is the fall barrage of games. Fallout, you know, everything is coming in the near future. So I think that this may be a bit of a detriment. I mean, it's great if you only play Forza, and if this is going to be your main game, because you'll be like, sure, I can wait another 3 weeks for this season to come around. But I did feel right away that the dauntingness of having to wait that extra week for something. That being said, the game is ridiculously fun. Mm-hmm. I am a little disappointed that when it said Britain, we're not getting London, we're not getting any real big cities, we're getting Edinburgh is the big city. Really? But that's it. The fun thing about that was that I actually found the hotel that I stayed at when I was in Edinburgh. It's not a hotel in the game. It's a cafe. But I rode my little car around it. And the people at Xbox were great enough to give me a code too for the James Bond series of Ooh. Cars. So I've been tooling around in Aston Martin Ooh. For like the whole time, and I wow, love that'll be nice. It. It's so good. My girl has been, she's got this crazy character. She's got these nutso pants, and she's wearing a top hat, and like she's just a little kooky, and she's driving around in this convertible. Oh, it's so good. It's so fun. And I feel like that's kind of, especially, you know, Moma and I, we've talked a lot about how we worked in news, and it gets to be a little daunting sometimes, and life gets to be very serious. So this game is just fun.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just full-on fun.
And honestly, every now and then you need one of those.
Yeah. And it's still got the drivatars. It's still got, you can race co-op, you can race player versus player, you can race solo, you can race as a team. So there's
lots
of... Is
there like a story mode or anything?
No, I mean, the story mode in the beginning is kind of just more of an introductory where it's like, here's the festival, you know, it's the basic stuff like, here's the festival. This year, in this iteration, you get a house. There's only really one festival per season. So, but you get houses where you can change up your cars, you can change up, you can redesign everything. So you can go around and you can buy for sometimes exorbitant amounts of money. You can buy Edinburgh Castle and have that be your home if you have 15 million credits. Right now, I've been playing the game for 3 weeks, and I have 1.5 million. So
you're almost there.
15 million.
Almost there.
Not really happening. But it's so fun to just tool around the British countryside. Whoever created the brick mechanic, the brick-breaking mechanic, I'm in love with this person. Because if you've ever gone to England, a lot of their roads are paved with small little brick and rock fences. And they're cute. They're like 4 stones high. But you can smash into them. And you smash into them, bricks, the rocks and stuff go everywhere. And it's so satisfying. Every time I hit one and I see the rocks go flying, I'm like, this might be my favorite part of the game is to smash into things.
Honestly, that's what I like to do in racing games.
Yeah, I'm a jerk in racing games.
Oh, yeah, totally.
I'm like, it's like a demolition game for me. And they brought back the classic FM, classical FM, which is what I always listen to when I'm playing Forza for some reason. I always listen to classical music. And I don't know why, but I really enjoy it.
You know what? If you're driving around the James Bond Aston Martin, it seems rather appropriate.
Yeah, I mean, they have like a bunch of different radio stations. I was a little disappointed in some of the variety of music. It's very hip-hop and like drum and bass oriented, which makes sense, I guess, for a racing game.
Look.
But it's such a tease because right away when you're in the mode in the first playing the game, they throw down a little Beck, and I was like, what's the radio station that I can listen to like
yeah.
Beck? No, it was just that song for that one race. I was
my thing is, if you're going to go to Britain, you better have a Britpop station.
Right? I would love that.
Yeah. I want a little Oasis, some Blur, some Manic Street Preachers, some
Stereophonics.
That would have made
me so happy.
You know? Running out of bands. Pulp. I want some Pulp.
Pulp, even like, obviously you're not going to get the Beatles because they're stupid expensive,
yeah.
But like... The Kinks, you can throw
sure.
in a little bit of classic Brits and
Clash.
No, there wasn't one of that, and I was a little disappointed that wasn't there. I feel like that was like that's an idea that's given to you on a silver
People
platter.
May not know this, but you and I were like big into the Britpop scene.
Oh yeah,
we were big suckers for the Britpop.
Oh yeah,
invasion.
like crazy, or yeah. even get like the cheaper stuff, the cheaper like Liam Gallagher solo stuff. Like it's fine.
Some Noel Gallagher and his High Flying Birds.
Yeah, like, it's fine. You can break that up a little bit. But no, so I was a little disappointed in that. But it's a really fun little game, and tooling around, the mechanics are great. The game is beautiful. It's the first game that I wish I had a better television to see how beautiful, like, to really take advantage of how beautiful this game is. It's gorgeous. There's a photo mode where you can share all your pictures and experiences, and, you know, and this is the kind of game... that it's perfect for. Because with
cool.
all the seasons, you can take a picture of the same area in all 4 seasons, and it'll look different, and it'll look just as beautiful in each one. The Forza team deserves a very good pat on the back for this. It's a beautiful game. I'm hoping that they do have an expansion that maybe brings in at least, like, Manchester or, like, one of the bigger cities still so you can kind of tool around.
London's probably a huge undertaking.
Yeah, London would
be
massive.
Hella cool, though.
London, you have to expand the map down to a specific, like, a very large portion of it. And the map is big, but it's not overwhelming big, which I do like, because I did find that in when they were in Australia, I found it was a little overwhelming to go all the way from Sydney to wherever. And so I do hope that they maybe DLC expand it out so you can get at least one other British city, because I like tooling around in the city. I mean, it's so pretty going around in these little country English cottage sides, but...
I would love a game that drives through London, though, you know?
Right?
That's so cool.
That'd be pretty good. I mean, we had Assassin's Creed.
That's true. That's true.
Gonna reference. I would give Forza Horizon 4 a solid 8.5. There's room for improvement, but the changes that they've made are really beneficial. And every year, I don't know how they're going to outdo themselves, and then they keep doing it.
It's a hell of a franchise.
It's a great team. It's frankly one of the most consistent Xbox exclusives.
And Lord knows they need those.
Absolutely.
Because the way Spidey's kicking ass, they need that. All right, so 8.5 out of 10 for Forza Horizon number 4 from Christine Chubb.
We were doing it out of fives, though, on the show. So what's that?
4.25.
4.25. out of 5.
All right, on to Starlink, which is a new game made by Ubisoft Toronto coming out on October 16th. If this is their version of the Toys to Life franchise, they do have a bit of a twist on it with the toys. I'm sure we'll hear more about that from Colin in a second. But if you don't know what Toys to Life is, you know, Skylanders, Disney Infinity.
R.I.P.
All the Lego, and R.I.P. for sure. All the Lego universe games. Ubisoft decided to take this on, made the announcement, I want to say 2 years ago maybe, that this is what they're doing. I think it was 2 years ago maybe.
A couple of E3s ago, I think.
So Colin got to go down to Ubisoft Toronto within the last couple of weeks where they did their big kind of media showcase for it. Comes out on the 16th, and here is Colin and his mystery guest talking about Starlink.
This is Colin Robertson, and today we welcome back a very special guest, Mr. Patrick Luciani. It's been a long time.
It's been very, very long. It's like months. This is the first time I think I'm on the new show.
Yeah.
Because I left when Got Game ended.
Yes.
I think.
It's been a while.
So it's been very, very long.
It's been a while.
Maybe almost a year.
Probably about that much.
Oh, hi, guys.
How's your time been since you've been gone? Have you been playing anything fun?
Like a bunch of games that I already own. I haven't really bought anything new. I have a kid on the way, and I'm poor now, so it kind of makes me sad. Why is my
thing flickering?
Flickering.
It's still recording you.
Oh, that's weird. Well, here I am. Okay, whatever. it's been really busy, so I haven't really gotten a lot of free time to kind
What's
of play new games.
What's the last game you remember playing? This is not good.
Counter-Strike Global Offensive.
That's fine.
City
of Heroes?
No,
wow.
The city. Not Spider-Man.
Not
essentially.
Spider-Man.
Not Spider-Man.
Don't and give me any pictures of Spider-Man.
And it makes me so sad.
I know.
Because all I want is that Spider-Man game.
Spider-Man is very good, and you should definitely get it.
Is leeching the money away from me.
It's okay. Just put some aside and get Spider-Man. It's worth it.
I really want it.
It's worth it.
Maybe I'll borrow it from somebody.
Maybe.
Do you have it on PlayStation?
Maybe.
Oh,
I need
the physical copy.
Yeah, it is. I know. I have to finish it first.
You have to finish it first.
I'm in middle of it.
All right, I'll wait.
But yeah, you better wait.
No, I want it now. Give it to me now.
No, you're waiting.
I need games of Spider-Man.
I need games of Spider-Man.
Give me games of Spider-Man. But we're here to talk about something else.
Are we?
Something I have been very skeptical about.
Yes.
And I understand you got your hands on.
Yes.
Which is Starlink Battle for Atlas?
Atlas?
Battle for Atlas? Is that what it is?
Atlas? Yes.
Starlink Battle for Atlas? Starlink Atlas? I can't remember. I'm only skeptical because I think toys to games don't work, except for that one game that worked.
Which?
I can't remember the name of it.
Skylanders?
Yeah, Skylanders.
Disney Infinity?
Just
Lego,
Skylanders. Disney Infinity is dead. Lego Dimensions is dead.
Yeah.
Like, I'm convinced it doesn't work. So, my first question to you, Colin.
Go on.
Is it bad?
It is not bad.
Wow!
It is very fun. It's like if No Man's Sky had a story off the
and
top.
And was good.
Which is good. Because, I mean, the one thing about No Man's Sky, especially on release, was that, like, you were floating through space just floating through space.
And you're like, this is really cool for 20 minutes. And then you're like, this is the game.
Yeah. And you're like, I am so alone.
In space.
But in Starlink, I mean, you have a whole cast of characters and a whole bunch of different pilots that you can choose from. So there's a whole bunch of different, you know, I guess, characters that you can just be
right.
And who you choose. And the nice thing is with Starlink is you can do it with or without the toys. So
you don't necessarily need the toys.
The toys are a nice addition.
Yeah.
And I would say, I don't know why you would want to do this without the toys because
it's literally a Toys to Life kind of IP,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. And the ships are really nice. The little pilot figurines are really nice. And like the weapon add-ons and stuff are really
cool.
Nice. It looks cool. It looks solid. It feels solid.
Right.
I really enjoyed the fact that it wasn't weighing my controller down that much.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask next, because I know it sits on your controller. It's not like one of the little
hubs.
Like a little hub like Disney Infinity or Lego Dimensions or anything like that. You got to are you plugging it into the USB?
So actually plugging it in onto your controller, connecting the bracket, and then connecting, like basically popping on and off your pilot first.
Right.
Because you have to get your physical pilot, you put it on there, and then you put the ship over your pilot because your pilot's inside the ship.
So you have the pilot figure?
Yeah.
And you're just plugging his ass into the bracket.
Yep.
The toy ship sits on top of him.
Goes on top of him.
So what is it like? So it's like a shell then?
Yeah. It's like a shell. It's essentially
a pilot in a shell.
Yeah, it's a pilot in a shell.
Okay.
Your pilot is the yolk and then the egg around him is the ship.
Okay, and like the other thing about the game, like I noticed when they did the trailer, was that they're taking off like weapons and they're bloop, 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 and like you switch out a weapon, you put in a new one, and it's like bloop, bloop, like making all the sound effects too.
All the sound effects.
And does that work?
It works really well.
Cool.
And the one thing I was worried about was when I was popping it off, I was like, I'm gonna break this thing.
Yeah.
Like I have giant hands. I'm gonna crush this little toy.
You are giant.
And it was strong. Like
right.
It was sturdy. And that was one of the things that I was like, okay, like thank God, because I was so worried about like popping it off and on. And it was really cool just to kind of switch up a bunch of weapons and then having the indicators when you're fighting enemies
mm-hmm.
of being like, oh, this one's weak to fire, so use your flamethrower.
Oh, so you're switching it out.
So you're like, okay, like I have ice weapons on, let me take those off.
Are you pausing it while you're doing this swap out?
No, you do it
so
straight.
So you're just flying away so that you're not getting hit while you're popping
pretty
things
pretty much. The screen comes out of their, like, resistances and their, I guess, vulnerabilities.
Mm-hmm.
And when it pops up, it pauses the game for you and allows you to make the switch if you want to.
Okay.
But, I mean, if you don't have those weapons, because they come in different packs.
So that's the other question. We can play this game with or without the toys. If you don't have the toys, are you able to switch out your weapons?
I'm sure you can. I'm sure you'd have to go through a pause menu to do it without the toys.
So you
and
have access to these weapons outside of actually owning the toys.
Yes. It looks that way. From like the hub and everything that I saw, it looks like you can
push pause and
go through it. Yeah.
Okay. That kind of ruins the fun of it.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And that's one of the things. I don't know why you would want to play this game
without the toys.
You don't
want to spend the money.
Oh, well, I guess.
Pretty much.
I guess so. But the toys, they look really good.
Yeah, yeah.
They're a lot of fun to kind of have around and kind of like say, oh, this is my ship.
Mm-hmm.
Like I have this physical ship and this is my pilot. Like this is who I also have. And to have those kind of things, I think adds a nice layer to the game.
Sure. And are you able to swap out ships?
Yes.
And it detects that when you put it on top of the pilot. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's really cool. I mean, the portal system, it's so instantaneous. It's really clean the way that they kind of do the switches.
Right.
It's a lot of fun. I mean, I was really impressed by that because that was my biggest kind of like, I don't know.
Was the toy thing.
Yeah.
Is it going to be too heavy for the controller? Will my giant hands break them?
There was only one ship. Yeah, exactly. There was only one ship that was, I felt the weight a bit.
Sure.
It was one of the bigger ones.
Right.
Okay. But otherwise, the rest of them
were. So you're not going to be flying giant battleships that'll sink your controller.
Well, one of the things is like, I had these two weapons on my ship and they had connectors for more weapons.
Yeah.
So I like loaded up on a bunch of weapons at one time and was flying around. But
you're gonna have the biggest wrists at the end of it ever. Like,
I am so strong now.
Either that or you're gonna get carpal tunnel in like 2 years.
Wow, you're so strong, you go to the gym? Nope, Starlink.
I'm in Starlink.
I play a lot of Starlink.
Do you even Starlink, bro?
Do you even Starlink? But aside from that, I really enjoyed it. It surprised me how much I enjoyed it.
And so the actual gameplay itself.
Yeah. Yeah, right? the ship kind of flying around, and the combat was a lot of fun. It was nice to kind of have a little bit of leeway when it came to the auto aim. Like, you could be a bit off, but it would still, like, your bullets would curve kind of and hit them. So that was nice. It wasn't very strict.
Lenient, yeah.
It was lenient, at least on the mode that I was playing on. It was lenient. So at harder levels, like maybe hard or expert or whatever, it would maybe be a little bit more strict. But
I'm sure also this is going to appeal to a bunch of kids, right? And some of them may not have the best aim.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I don't know anymore. Like, growing up with this stuff, they may have better aim than I do.
Every kid's playing Fortnite. They all have way better aim than us now.
They're able to snipe you from 500 meters away.
We're all getting sniped.
Yeah. So, okay, that's good then. That's a lot more promising than I thought it was going to be. Because I was like, why are they doing this? And this came out like as Disney Infinity collapsed, and then
Lego Dimensions
a couple
also,
months later, Lego Dimensions went down the pooper as well.
Yeah,
they announced this. I'm like, well, that's kind of
I know. I never thought we were going to see another Toy to Life.
Yeah, totally.
I it didn't seem
like if you can't make it work with
Lego
that
or Disney
deep of an IP, right? How do you? But I guess there's so much of it. Like I could see the market almost getting oversaturated with Disney Infinity and Lego. Especially the Lego stuff, because all the kits were like $20-30.
Yeah,
and it only came with three kind of characters to choose from when you got Lego Dimensions, and then there's all these other kits. You're like, well, like I'm gonna be dropping hundreds of dollars on this game that's okay. It's not like it's like this immersive RPG where I'm gonna get all this. Sink all this time and money into. It was just like a bunch of toys and I don't know.
Well,
maybe I was the wrong market for it. Maybe everyone was the wrong market for it.
The base kit, from what I saw, is so you get the game, a ship, and a pilot, and I think a few weapons, and that was $100.
Okay.
And I was like, well, that makes sense. I mean, a game, most games are $79.99 now.
Sure. That's just where it's going to be. You're going to be spending $100 on a game one day soon. Eventually, anyway.
So an extra $20 to actually get the physical ship and
ships.
A few other things. It's the price point, I think, is very reasonable for
it
is.
Yeah. Yeah. That's pretty good bang for your buck.
Yeah.
And did they have the price points for actual just ships or?
I saw a ship. I think it was $20 or $30.
Okay.
It was so. To get extra,
and do they come with
ship.
All the weapons or?
No. The weapons are actually in like separate packs. Mm. Which, I mean,
which is basically what DLC is anyway, so.
Yeah, I know.
It's just you're getting a physical copy of it.
My biggest worry about the weapons was I thought they were going to make them blind packages. I thought
like you end up with 9 flamethrowers at the end of it all? Yeah,
exactly.
I'd go ballistic.
That was my biggest worry.
Sure.
But to see them actually in like a clear box, like labeled and everything, I was like, okay.
And it sounds like you'll need all of them.
It sounds like, yeah, because I mean, there's a whole bunch of different planets, different enemies and stuff. And of course, you're probably going to end up be using each of them. I'm sure they considered that.
Or you'll want them, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that sounds promising then. Yeah, do you know when it's out?
It is out on, I should know this, but I don't. I don't know this.
This is where we edit. This is where we edit the part.
Edit
here.
Edit here.
Now it looks. Now you can see it. Okay, there you go. So you know when it's coming out?
Yeah, it's October 16th.
Okay, and that's on every like Switch, Xbox, and PS4.
Yep.
I could see this like huge for the Switch. I guess. Well, how does it work?
I think
with the
it will
Switch?
Be huge
Do you
for
need
the
like the big?
Well, here's like, I didn't
what
see
are you
any connector.
Oh.
I didn't see any connector for the Switch, but the Switch does get Star Fox. And the Star Fox
ship. Well, why are you not buying this game?
I know. Like, that's the thing.
So you get the Star Fox.
Yeah, pilot. And he's got
you get a ship?
You get a ship, too. You get the Fox McCloud ship, and it comes with its own special storyline.
Oh, cool.
So what we could end up with is a Star Fox game. Essentially.
Yeah, essentially.
Essentially, like, the Switch is getting Starlink Fox McCloud, the
Starlink
game.
Starlink Fox. That's pretty cool.
So I'm excited for that because I want to play this for the Switch. I want this for the
We don't know what it plugs into, though.
I don't know. It's got to be something on the Switch.
Because
so.
Like, because you've got the two paddles, right?
Yeah.
And then that connects to like that, the pad, right?
Yeah, I didn't see what it connects to.
So it's got to go into the pad.
I'm
like,
guessing
unless, like, because I'm holding my hands up as if I'm holding the paddles.
Patrick is
like,
currently fiddling with his hands,
but
turning almost like a Rubik's Cube.
I solved the Rubik's Cube.
You did it.
I did, but I don't know where this
I don't care where it connects to. The fact that it's Fox or Cloud.
For the Switch.
It made me think maybe other companies, maybe like Microsoft should have said, we want to do a Master Chief Edition.
Maybe there will be.
Maybe there will be. Maybe depending on how well this does, maybe we could get different editions.
Imagine that'd
stuff.
Be very hard for Ubisoft to kind of secure all those licenses.
I don't know.
I'm sure it was a pain to get Star Fox.
Well,
to get
suddenly Ubisoft has this partnership with Nintendo, which I didn't think was ever going to be possible Nintendo is very
and all they're doing is pumping out games for PlayStation, pretty much.
Yeah.
Right.
So I can't wait to see more of this game. I'm excited from what I got to play, and I really hope it does well because the ships look awesome, and I'm a sucker for toys.
Yeah, and you're a sucker for toys.
I'm a sucker for toys.
You're going to have an entire room in your house just of Starlink
ships.
Toys and other...
And me just, playing and then ripping a ship off and then throwing another
you
one on.
You don't work! And throwing it across the... And then just opening up a new package and getting a new toy.
It's going to be a disaster for me.
It's going to be a disaster for you and your wallet.
And my wallet.
And your marriage.
I've already set everything on... I've already set my wallet on fire.
You've already sat Jen down. Listen, I'm going to be spending an obscene amount of money on the Starlink stuff. But Star Fox is going to be in it.
Yeah, but Star Fox will be there. I got Fox, don't worry.
Yeah.
Fox McCloud.
That's going to be awesome.
So that is Colin Robertson and Patrick Luciani talking about Starlink, which comes out on October 16th. Patrick, if you didn't listen to the old version of this show when it was called Got Game, was a staple host who was a host and then left and then came back and was a host again. And we're happy to have him walk through the doors of the studio and come on anytime he damn well pleases, whether there is anything to talk about gaming related or not. Quickly do want to mention, or maybe not quickly, maybe I'll take my time and say this. Happy Thanksgiving. We should have said that at the start of the show. Happy Thanksgiving, folks. It is that weekend. I feel like it's super early this year. Am I wrong?
No, it is.
It's like the first weekend in October. Is that? I don't know if that's when it usually is.
No, this is the earliest it can be, I think.
Yeah, I can't. Well, I mean, it's October 5th.
Yeah.
I mean, how much earlier can you get?
That means that gap between Christmas and Thanksgiving is going to be long. Let's just all go down to... the States in November and have that turkey.
So it's funny you mentioned that. My cousin moved to New York last year for optometry college.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't come up for American Thanksgiving last year because he's like, there's just too much stuff to do or whatever. And so I messaged him. I was like, what if we come down for American Thanksgiving? He's like, I would love that. And he lives in a house with two roommates. And apparently his roommates are going home for Thanksgiving because they're American and he's
beautiful.
Canadian. And so he's like, come. So I might actually go down to... the U.S., check out the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade.
Nice.
You know, do the whole thing.
That'll be fun. That sounds like a good old time.
Yeah, be kind of rad. Now I've talked myself into it here. I think I'm going to leave the studio and immediately put in my vacation request.
That's what the show is all about, talking us into things.
Yes, exactly. I'm still playing Spider-Man a lot.
Nice.
Because it's so good.
You think you're going to... what do you call it? Platinum trophy it or whatever.
I'm going to try to. Yeah. I honestly am never, even with the Arkham games, I didn't care about going for 100%.
Yeah.
But for some reason in this Spidey game, I'm just kind of obsessed with it.
Yeah.
I spent the last four times I've played it, which has been almost every day, I've spent several hours completely ignoring the story mission and just doing the side quests. Like, I'm just collecting backpacks and going to the Oscorp labs and doing that thing and finding the black cat and just doing all that stuff. And I'm just going around from district to district because that's all I want to do. It's in a lot of games, doing the side missions and all the things that you're supposed to do are sometimes tedious, but not in this game. I'm really enjoying it. It's
good.
A lot of fun. And I have to say, and I said it in my review last show, and I'll say it again, the swinging mechanic, which I felt was make or break for this game, is fantastic. It's so well done. You have so much control. It's great. I don't know, Christina, I guess you haven't played Spidey, but I highly recommend it.
I got a bit of hands-on when I was at E3. I sat down and played it. And that was my reaction, too. And, when we played the interview just after I came back, they nailed it. They had to, and they knew they had to, and they absolutely nailed it.
Yeah.
And it's a game that I haven't picked up. I haven't had as much time for gaming as I would like. But, I made an exception for Forza because I'm on vacation. So, but it's on the list of things. The only game that I see coming in the future that I'm going to make some kind of effort to play is Red Dead 2.
Yeah,
Red everything Dead 2. Else is going to have to wait. Even Assassins that's come out tomorrow is going to have to wait. But Red Dead, I'm going to make that exception.
I hear you.
Because it's Red Dead.
Also, next episode, we'll hopefully have a review of Tomb Raider.
Oh, yeah.
Coming.
And we should have, Colin should have his review of Assassin's Creed.
Yeah.
By that time.
Yay. Absolutely. So there's a lot of stuff. Well, this is it, folks. We have arrived. It is heavy gaming season. The holiday season. I'm sure you've been to the stores and seen some Christmas stuff up already. There was Halloween stuff up in August, which is atrocious.
One of our camera guys at City took a picture of eggnog already in the store. It's like, how long are you going to buy that for?
Well, it's
how much do you like eggnog that you're like, oh, I'm going to keep this in the fridge for the next 3 months?
If you have somebody in your family or a friend who talked about buying eggnog, when they serve it to you over Christmas time, maybe don't drink it.
Yeah, if they're tweeting about it now.
Maybe don't drink it. Just politely decline and have something else. Have some
Homer
water.
Simpson nodding politely.
Yeah, exactly.
Just don't drink it.
Just don't do it.
Do you drink eggnog?
No, I've never had it.
Really?
Ever.
Ever?
No.
I think is eggnog a white thing? I feel like eggnog's a white thing.
One, yes.
Yeah.
And two, also just coming from a culture where I didn't celebrate Christmas, it just wasn't like around.
Fair enough.
So, I mean, I don't think I would. It's not something that I frown upon.
No.
It's just something that was literally never in my house, so I never had it.
I just associate it with, like, terrible Christmas parties. So, like, if somebody's office had a Christmas party, or if you're going to, like, somebody in the neighborhood or whatever, you know, somebody's always bringing. There's always that one person who brings that box of eggnog.
So I'll be honest with you. I don't really know what it is.
Okay.
It doesn't sound appetizing, though.
No.
And question number two for you. So question number one, what is eggnog?
Eggnog is a blended drink that is made of eggs and cream and vanilla and cinnamon.
I need a nap just hearing about it.
And it's really heavy. It's got it's got a cream-based kind of consistency.
It's so diabetes in a cup is what you're saying?
Absolutely it is. And then you add rum to it, usually.
Now this is why I've never had eggnog.
Yeah, well, you don't have to. It's not.
I know. That was my second question to you. Number one was, what is eggnog? And number two is, from my understanding, most people do not have the eggnog by itself, and that most people put some sort of alcohol in it to kick it up, which is in large part why I haven't had it.
Yeah, rum is the go-to. Usually, in my house, it used to be a spiced rum, mm-hmm. and then you top it off with some nutmeg and cinnamon. And it was tasty. My dad actually loved eggnog, so we always used to have it every year around the house. And last year, I made a vegan eggnog, which actually turned out to be really good.
Isn't that just nog then? There's egg in the vegan eggnog.
It was called Vegnog.
Of course it is.
Yeah. That actually turned out to be really good. It was definitely lighter. It wasn't as thick as eggnog was, but flavor-wise, it was pretty tasty. It was very Christmassy. I put a little bit of, like, whipped cream on top of it, and it was good. I wasn't upset. I wasn't angry at it at all.
You know what? Maybe I will try some eggnog this year. It sounds unappetizing, but...
It is an experience, and you have to have it cold. Do not have eggnog warm.
Ew.
No.
Have it warm. Can I tell you?
Well, because sometimes it sits out, and in a punch bowl and it sits out, no, you gotta throw in them ice cubes. You gotta make sure that is cold.
You are aware of my displeasure for watermelon.
Yes.
The other thing I do not like at all...
Is eggnog. Eggnog.
Yep. Soon to be eggnog, but also warm milk. Not a fan of warm milk. It seems very...
What about hot chocolate?
Hot chocolate's okay, but hot chocolate's too hot. Chocolate invariably burns your mouth.
Yes.
It makes no sense as a beverage.
Yeah.
Warm chocolate, sure. Hot chocolate, no. But I'm also not generally big on hot liquids. Like, I'm not a big soup guy. I mean, I'll eat soup maybe, like, sometimes, but I'm not big on, like, warm liquid.
Yeah.
I'm not a tea person.
I'm a room temperature person. I like all of... And I don't like things too cold either. I like everything to be room temperature. Oh. Like, I am the kind of person who I never want to make my tea. I don't let the kettle boil all the way. I will pour myself a glass of water or something, and then I will have it sit on the counter.
Now, as somebody of British heritage, is that not blasphemous to not like your tea, like, 1,000 degrees centigrade?
It's frowned upon, I would say, in general. But no, because in England, you like your beer at room temperature. Everything is room temperature is a very British thing. Just because...
I did not know that.
In England, especially, I don't know. I've never been to Ireland, but I imagine under the same guise, it's the same. as in many European places, like the fridges are small. You don't have that big giant fridge. You have a small fridge. So it's only the things that need to be in there. So like drinks are often left on the counter. If you want it to ice, you can put ice in it. But like having everything cold is a very North American thing.
So. Well, I sure hope our listeners are enjoying this lesson about eggnog and room temperature booze and fridges.
They listened to, they got too excited that Patrick was on the show and then they tuned out.
We talked about gaming for 45 minutes, damn it. Now we'll talk about whatever we want to talk about.
I got to say though, what do you think about Starlink? Are you at all concerned that this may be an hindrance to the glorious people at Ubisoft Toronto?
I have limited to no interest in this.
Yes.
I'm willing to give it a chance, but it's definitely not in my wheelhouse of things that I would run out to the store and buy. But I don't think I'm their target audience. I don't think they are necessarily looking at me and being like, that's the guy that's going to get our stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have children, so that's another thing.
But you have nieces and nephews.
I do, but they're teenagers now, so maybe they don't want that stuff.
Fair enough.
But I can definitely see its appeal, though. Mm-hmm. Like, just because I'm not into it, I can see its appeal. I think it's a gamble, for sure, but it's a gamble that could pay off huge, so.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, when we were talking about all the different other games to the toy-based games, and it's just, it's not just RIP Disney Infinity, it's RIP Lego Dimensions, and, you know, it's a gamble that I really do hope pays off, because the people at Ubisoft Toronto are lovely.
Yeah, we love them very much.
And especially considering, you know, what's happened in the last month with like Telltale closing down and Capcom Vancouver shutting down. The last thing we need is to have another big hit to the gaming market.
Well, similarly to what me and Steve talked about with esports last week, I think it's the same with the Toys to Life. One is getting it to hit right off the bat.
Mm-hmm.
So will people care about Starlink? And the other is to sustain it.
Yeah.
That's the problem that Disney Infinity had. That's the problem that Lego Universe,
Lego Dimensions had.
I
loved Lego Dimensions, by the way. It was so fun.
Especially since they had all the properties. It was great. But, you know, getting people to care about it 6 months from now is what the challenge is, because it's a model that's designed on people continuing to buy stuff.
Yeah, forking over all that money. Yeah. It's not just like buying DLC here. You're buying like plane packs.
And so that's kind of, I think, what they're up against is will people who get it and buy it and get it for Christmas want to keep buying stuff in by July of next year or next Christmas. That's always the kind of issue.
Yeah.
Hopefully it works.
I hope it does. I really hope it does. The people at UB Toronto are great, and they've done a lot for that community, and we know a lot of people who work there, and they're all very good people. So fingers crossed.
Yeah.
It's an exciting adventure for them.
Hey, you know, sometimes you got to really roll the dice.
Yeah.
And put something out there, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Hopefully this time it works.
And to have it be a whole new IP, like that's a lot on your shoulders,
that's a lot,
too.
Yeah.
Like it's not, I mean, it was great when they did Splinter Cell, but Splinter Cell was things that people knew. This is a whole new world.
A new fantastic point of view.
Da da da! Disney's gonna sue us. It's okay.
Disney.
Da, da, da.
If Disney sued me, they'd be sadly very disappointed. They're gonna look at my bank account and be like, "Wow, this guy's money isn't even worth the paper it's printed on."
Right? Like my knockoff purse isn't even worth the money that I paid for it.
My gucky shoes should tell you.
My Payless shoes. You can have.
You can afford Payless?
Well, I get somebody else to buy that first pair, and then I get the second pair. That's how I roll.
Wise.
That's how I live in downtown Toronto. That's how I pay for it.
I hear you.
Yeah, so Godspeed Gaming. We got a lot coming up. We got a lot coming up.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't played Tomb Raider yet. That's still sitting there ready to be played. Red Dead's coming. We got the Assassin's Creed coming out. Starlink's coming. There's a lot of good stuff down the pipe. So brace yourself, because we're in holiday mode, and I bet you there's people out there who have already done their shopping, you know? I mean, I'm not one of them.
No.
Because I don't have to do any. So I guess I am done.
There you go.
But,
you're ahead of the curb.
What, right before we finish, what's your general rule for the Christmas shopping? Do you wait last minute? Are you somewhere in the middle?
No.
Are you done early?
I've always been last minute. I like it. I find that I'm more efficient.
Mm-hmm.
The few years ago, I tried to be an earlier shopper. My aunt gets everything done by November.
Wow.
Yeah, like she goes down to the States for the Thanksgiving long weekend and she buys everybody's gifts. I tried to do that one year where I bought ahead of time and then I forgot that I had bought gifts and then I realized I double bought a lot of things. So people got a lot of gifts from me that year.
Wow.
But usually my whole thing used to be December the 22nd, I would go to the Eaton Center and I would not leave until everything was done. Mm. That includes like buying cards, buying gifts, buying gift wrapping paper, sometimes getting it wrapped there. Like literally everything had to be done.
I'm just picturing Christine getting up in the morning on December 22nd, doing like a Rocky montage where you're like, you know, drinking eggs out of a glass and like doing push-ups and being like, and then you stand outside the mall and you're like pumping yourself like, okay, here we go. And then the doors open and you just go in and you just like do the best. Like, you're the best around. Nothing's ever. And you're just like every few minutes we're seeing more bags in your hands.
That's
going
right.
Through, elbowing your way through hordes of people.
You're not far off. I liked it though because I felt like I had a mission.
Mm.
And it was like, and it wasn't a lot of dilly-dallying and sauntering through the mall. It was like, no, we are getting it done and we are getting it done in a respectable amount of time.
So every year I'm sent down to the Eaton Center on like December 23rd to do the, it's last busiest shopping day of the year. And I actually love doing that story because you see some people kind of casually sauntering through the mall and you see some people like stressed out of their gourd in like a complete panic being I got so much to do.
And then there's Christine, who goes powering through with the determination of some kind of animal.
I will leave you this week with one story, which is one of my favorite stories to tell.
Okay.
I was with a friend of mine, one of my best friends. We were in the mall. She celebrates Christmas. I do not. It's like late December. I can't remember. It's like the 21st, 22nd, 23rd, something like that. We're in the mall, and we're walking through. And this is a very rookie mistake move by me because I was only like 20 or 21 at the time. And we're walking through the mall and I go, you know, I really love Christmas time. And she just turns and she's holding like 8 bags and she does in a belt face where she looks at me and like a scene out of a movie, she just throws everything on the floor and she says, you know what? If I could just walk around and listen to the music and drink hot chocolate and not have to worry about anything and not have to buy any gifts for my family and not have to go to any dinner parties, I would love Christmas too. And she just turns around and storms away. She just storms away and all her bags are on the ground. And you just see a guy look at me and be like, dude. And I was like, I know. And I'm like picking them up one by one.
Wow.
I was like, that right? And that friend of mine is usually the most like chill, like calm, relaxed, like very at peace with everything. But Christmas time, I guess, gets the best of us.
And, yeah, Christmas.
And she was like, I'm not having any of this. I was like, ooh, okay.
Christmas is a monster.
But a delightful monster.
It has its moments.
I don't celebrate it, but I love it.
Yeah.
I love Christmas time. I took off 2 weeks for Christmas this year. I'm super pumped.
Gonna play lots of video games.
Heck yeah. All right. So, hope you enjoyed this week's show. That's really all I had to say. Christine, I'm glad you're back this week.
Thank you.
Hopefully, Steve's going to Japan, so I don't think he's gonna be on for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe Colin or Patrick can come back into studio soon, and we can do another show, or if you're around, come back in. But for Christine Chubb, my name is Momin Qureshi. This has been Gaming in the Six. You'll hear from us again in 2 weeks. Goodbye.
Boom.